This is Jen.
This is Kelsey.
And you're listening to the first 50 pages.
Hey, Kelsey, what kind of reader are you?
I would say I probably am a series junkie, but also I really have kind of my preferred genres. So I stick to a lot of mystery thrillers, but recently I've gotten into a lot more true crime, so I kind of binge read a lot of that stuff. But I would also say it kind of, I follow trends a little bit. I don't try to get into it too much, but I do kind of like to read kind of what's new and popular at the same time. How about you?
I would say that I'm definitely a promiscuous reader. I am a book cheater. I will abandon a book if it doesn't catch me and grab the next thing that catches my eye. I'm a trend reader too, so I do like to read things that everybody is talking about. I want to know what all the buzz is about. I'm definitely a library lover. I get my books from the library.
Yes, then you don't have that guilt of if you don't finish it, like
exactly.
You can return it. You haven't bought it.
Those two things go hand in hand. I say I'm a multitasker too, because with all the books that I have, you know, on my nightstand, on my desk, I'll start reading one chapter in a book, you know, in the morning, at lunch, I read a different one, at night, I read a different one. So yeah, I've always got multiple books that I'm reading.
Nice.
If you take a moment to think about it, reading has probably played a larger role in your life than you are even aware. A really interesting question to think about and to explore is how we develop our relationship to reading.
We've invited Jesse Wakefield, a librarian specialist at the Sioux City Public Library, to join us today to talk about it.
Welcome, Jesse.
Welcome.
Thank you.
We always like having other librarians on so we can kind of get as much expertise as possible.
Well, you asked me to talk about books, so that was an easy yes.
Yeah, not going to be a hardship
for
you, I don't think.
So some people love reading, some people hate reading, and for some people, it's complicated. So for those readers who love reading, books are cherished objects, oftentimes to be protected and preserved. And yet, to others, loving books looks very different.
There could be dog-eared pages or underlined passages, which, as librarians, when we get those books back from people that have checked them out at the library, we're like, there's like that collective gasp, like, somebody dog-eared a page, you know, underlined it. We like quick get our pencils out to erase it. And there are, you know, readers out there that really just kind of hate reading, so I guess they wouldn't even really be considered readers. They are those type of readers that, you know, they're looking to censor books, or they want to tell you how much they hated a book, that, you know, this author was completely terrible, or like, I hated this plot, I don't know how anybody could like this book. Then there are the anti-readers. They refuse to read anything, and they'd rather be doing anything else.
I think that there's a lot of readers out there that fall under the third category of conflicted, or it's complicated. I actually did a post today asking people how they identified themselves as a reader, and almost across the board, it was a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of this, but ultimately, it's complicated.
Yeah. It's one of those things that's super hard to define.
It is.
Like,
and you know
question.
What? I think of somebody who really loves reading, they don't want to be boxed in, really.
Mm-hmm.
And this, it's complicated, I'm conflicted about it, kind of make sure that you understand, I love to read, but it's got to come from every which direction. I don't want to be put in a box. I just want to be able to read what I want to read.
Yeah, and kind of who also falls under that category are those, you know, kind of the book snobs, mm-hmm. where, you know, they're the critics and the show-offs and the very pretentious people that are like, I'm only going to read that if it spent so many weeks on the New York Times bestseller list, or I only read award winners that, you know, they'd never be caught dead with like a mass market paperback romance.
How disparaging can we be on this podcast? Because I don't think that those are real readers, honestly.
They're book lovers.
They're not book lovers. They're basically token readers.
Yeah,
it's not. That's not the enjoyment. Yeah, it's not the enjoyment of reading.
Mm-hmm.
It's the, as the title says, it's the prestige
mm-hmm.
of reading. I want you to see which books I have on my shelf.
Yeah,
and then be able to say, yes, I've read that.
And I feel like sometimes those are the people that can't really like talk about or express what they read. That they're just like, oh yeah, I've read that.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay,
it's
well,
maybe
what did
harder
you like
for them to
it?
Analyze
did you
it.
Not?
Yeah.
That there's kind of not that reading comprehension because mm-hmm. they're not really reading it because they want to.
Right. I agree with that. And prestige readers, look, if you read, I'm happy.
Yeah.
doesn't matter what you read as long as you read, but I'm also going to want to talk to you about it afterwards. So even if you hated it, even if it's my favorite book in the world and you hated it, I still want to be able to talk to you about it. Sometimes I feel prestige readers can't do that as well.
Definitely. And sometimes the best, you know, discussions that we have at book club or, you know, with patrons at the desk or, you know, where they come in and they're like, so I tried that book out and mm-hmm. I completely hated it. Sometimes those make for the best discussions. You know, if I mm-hmm. have book clubbers that come in, they're like, oh, I could not stand that book, but I forced myself to finish it. That sometimes those are the best conversations. Right. Definitely.
I actually led a book discussion where I was that person coming in going, guys, I did not like this book.
Do you run into that a lot, Jen?
I'm just having so much fun listening to the both of you. This is a great conversation. I'm totally into it. So when we go back to that question of how we develop our relationship to reading, we've kind of got some questions for you, Jesse.
We're going to put you on the spot.
I love it.
So did anyone read to you as a child? And if so, who?
You know, I have no memory of anybody reading to me as a kid. I believe it's impossible for that not to have happened. Somebody had to have sat down and read to me. But what I can say is that my mom taught me how to read when I was 4 years old. So she took that time to make sure that I knew how to read. And from there, I just took it on myself. She saw that I did have an interest in reading. She was helping my older brother learn how to read, and I at four was kind of like, what you doing? I want to do that too. If Josh is doing that, I want to do it. So she saw that I had an interest in it, and so she taught me how to read, which I think helped her a lot because mother of three, there's one that can entertain themselves. Excellent.
And it's interesting that you say that because I was thinking about this question myself, and I don't have those memories of having storybooks read to me. And I actually had lunch with my mom this week and I said, did you read to me when I was, you know, before I was in school? And she said, I really didn't read to you that much. But yet I still have developed a really great relationship with reading myself. But you said, so your mom taught you to read. Did anyone in particular encourage you to read once you learned to read?
In school, when I was the only reader in kindergarten, and there were a lot of teachers and a lot of counselors that kind of honed in on that and basically wanted to encourage and feed that as much as possible. So they would give me extra books. All I ended up doing was getting more work than all the other kids. But
like all the other kids are outside at recess.
Yeah,
and then Jesse's
I'm in the library here. I didn't mind though. But also everybody in my family read. So by example alone at home, there was my mom over there reading a book and my brother reading a book. And my dad, he didn't read as much as everybody else in the family because he's so busy. But he also loved to read, and he loved to read fantasy. At least I remember that, him reading those type of books, and just it was just around all the time.
Great memories for you, I'm sure. And I think that's an important point to make, is that example that you remember mm-hmm. reading as something that people did in your home.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Kelsey? Did anyone read to you as a child or encourage you to read?
I mean, we lived not very far from the public library, so I was, you know, there at like every single story time. I have cousins that are, a lot of us are at the same age, so, you know, we were always participating in story time, so I've known the library director in my hometown my whole entire life. So, I mean, that's cool to, like, now that we share that same profession, to be able to talk about books more. But I remember her leading story time. And I had a cousin when I was a kid who worked at a bookstore. So she was always sending me, you know, the latest and greatest picture books and chapter books as a kid. So being able to kind of have that and have that encouragement kind of outside of my immediate family was really fun. And I remember that, you know, she would always write little notes in there. So I still have those on my bookshelf at home.
Oh, cool.
So that's kind of a fun thing to have, and a nostalgic look, you know, when you look back and read through all the different notes from the 90s and kind of what was going on. So
I had a caretaker before I was in school, and she was a retired kindergarten teacher, and she had books on vinyl records, and
I had those.
It was really just such a wonderful and kind of cherished memory for me to sit, and even though I couldn't read the pages, I was listening to the story.
Is it one that went when you hear this noise, turn the page.
Yes, yes. And I remember that Pinocchio, it was not the Disney Pinocchio, but it terrified me. And still to this day, Pinocchio terrifies me. But it's true. And then I remember loving. No, it was. I wanted to always I got to pick what book I wanted, and I would always pick it because it was. I was so engaged in the story.
Mm-hmm. People and what love scary
was,
movies.
And
people
what
love
was
scary
happening,
books, yeah.
Yeah. You know. So yeah, really a cherished memory for me to sit and be able to do that. And she definitely encouraged me to read, and you know, I had access to books all the time. Do you remember the first book that you read, Jesse?
The very first one, no. I don't remember what the very first book I read was. But I have very strong memories of reading. Have you ever heard of the Serendipity books by Stephen Cosgrove?
No.
Okay, no, that's fine.
But now I want to know.
It was a series of basically fantasy creatures.
Oh.
And the illustrations were beautiful and they were bright and they were about these creatures and they had a whole series of them. And I remember reading those a lot. And I remember reading Berenstain Bears a lot and basically any golden book stuff. Yep. I have a vivid, vivid memory of being about 4 years old in the laundry room, sitting in a laundry basket with all of the clothes on top of me and on top of the clothes, a Richard Scarry book.
Okay.
And the bookworms and all of that sort of stuff. So it will be with me for the rest of my life of just sitting in that laundry basket reading those type of books. My first chapter book that I read was probably Sideways Stories from Wayside School by Lewis Sacker.
Yeah.
But I, from a very early age, went from this to that to this to that. Anything that grabbed my attention.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to keep track of those. Do you remember your first book, Jen?
It was probably Hop on Pop.
Oh, sure.
By Dr. Seuss, probably the first book that I remember sounding out the words for. But the first chapter book that I was completely engrossed in and lost in the story and couldn't put it down and, you know, just nose in the book constantly was From the Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Basil E. Frankweiler by E.L. Konigsberg.
Oh, I love that.
And I'm
one.
Actually, in thinking about these questions that we were going to ask you today, I checked out that book from the library because I remember it as being such a great reading experience for me, but I haven't read it again. And so now I'm reading it and wondering what the young me loves so much about it. But it is really a fun story. It's about a girl and her brother that run away to New York City for an adventure. They're escaping, you know, the rules of their family, not really anything terrible, but they want this adventure and they go kind of hide out in the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And, you know, it's that adventure. And yeah, I'm really enjoying rereading it. So I would recommend that to anybody. Reread the first book that you remember reading and see what you take away from it now.
I'm a firm believer that no two people ever read the same book. And along with that, no one person ever reads the same book twice.
Oh, for sure.
Because of where you are in your life when you read it. There's only a handful of books, really, that I've reread because there's so many books out there that needs to be read.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember rereading them as an adult as opposed to when I was a teenager and just getting so much more out of it. And just one of them being Ender's Game. I read Ender's Game when I was 19, and I loved it. I at that point, thought of it as one of my favorite books. But I reread it again probably about 4 years ago. Bawled my eyes out. Because now I'm a mother. Now I'm an adult. Now, I mean, it's just, there were so many different plot points and themes that screamed out to me that I might have actually missed the first time around.
Yeah,
so
good point.
I would be very interested. I should probably reread more books because of that. But like I said, my to-read list is so long.
Yeah, when you're a librarian, it's kind of hard to want to go back to like read other books when you have access to so many different books at the library that, you know, we see what comes in and we see what's checking out and, you know, what's getting all the buzz or, you know, maybe you have a favorite, you know, author that they just put out a new book that you got to get on the hold shelf for that. But it's hard to go back.
It's really
hard
to go back.
Or make time for it.
Yeah.
Kelsey, do you remember the first book that you ever read?
I know we've kind of been going over chapter books, but probably the first book that I remember reading and loving was Madeline by Ludwig Bemelmans. And I remember in elementary school, we always did this character counts parade, and you had to dress up as your favorite book character.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was Madeline. I had the whole, you know, little hat.
Do you have a picture?
I'm sure my mom has a picture somewhere.
Yeah. Hey, Kelsey's mom. We're asking for that picture.
It'll go on the website.
Yeah. We'll just put embarrassing photos out there. That'll be real great.
Fantastic.
But I remember just loving that story and falling in love with Paris and all the girls that were there and, you know, that she lived with and the dog and, you know, all of that. That as a kid, I was like, oh.
It this just is was, it.
It was, yeah, like, this is it. I can't even handle this. Like, there's never going to be anything better.
Yeah. And, this but, is what my life has led me to.
Yeah. But probably chapter books. I, as a kid, was kind of a series junkie, and I really read a lot of series. Like, I got a little too obsessed with it that if I started a series, I was going to have to read every single book that was in the library on it. So I read, you know, The Boxcar Children, every single Nancy Drew. I even went into The Hardy Boys a little bit. They weren't as good as Nancy Drew for me. But
do you remember Encyclopedia Brown?
Yep, I read all those. I read all those too, but, you know, it was just kind of, then it became a point of pride. Like, oh yeah, I could go in the library and be like, I read every book on that shelf.
What?
I was that kid.
Yeah. Which, one of those for me was Sweet Valley Twins. Which was funny because their names were Elizabeth and Jessica, and their last name was Wakefield.
Same name.
So I'm like, that's the reason I married my husband, was just to know I can be Jessica Wakefield.
I will say, I think I read every one of those, too.
Yeah.
But what I find interesting is that you say you were a series junkie.
Oh, yeah.
And you just, if you started it, you had to finish it. I'm definitely a completionist. If I start a series, I have to start at the beginning. I can't. Even if they say, it's a great standalone. No, I'm starting at the beginning. But I don't necessarily finish a series. I am not that compulsive about, this is now where I have to go. My mood takes me wherever I go.
Yeah.
And if my mood is like, and we're done with that series, my mood is taking me in this direction, I will follow it wherever it goes.
Yeah, I'd say probably my reading habits have changed a little bit more, like, as I've gotten older. Jen, do you have a favorite book of all time? I know this is a question we've all been agonizing over the whole week and prepping for this week's episode.
I think that is really an impossible question.
Hear, hear.
If you are a book lover, it is so hard to pick one. I think there are those books that you will go back and reread just because you do get different things from them. And for me, it's some of the classics. Like, I have read Pride and Prejudice multiple times, and at different times in my life, you get different things from the story, just like you said. To Kill a Mockingbird will probably always have a very special place in my heart. And again, that's a book that I have read multiple times. Nice. And oddly enough, I love The Scarlet Letter by Nathaniel Hawthorne. I read that, I think, once, and then I read it in college, but I had a phenomenal professor that led us through that book. And I would like to, I think, read it again and see if I pick up on different elements of it. So, I mean, for a lot of times, the classics are my favorite because I've had an opportunity maybe to read them again. For modern titles, like more modern, The Book Thief by Marcus Duzak is, you know, I've cried reading that book. I mean, it was just an amazing experience to read for me. And then Everyone Brave is Forgiven. It's a book by Chris Cleave. And I did a check it out on that book.
I remember that.
It really resonated with me at the time reading it. And someday I'm sure I will read that one again. So that's my short list. What about you, Jesse?
You know, short few.
Okay, I cannot let this moment go without me saying something. I hate The Scarlet Letter. And I... and
it's a podcast throwdown.
Sorry, Jen, I hate your book choice.
No, but this is what I love about it. It's because I recognize the importance of that book. And I think the story is phenomenal. I just don't need 5 pages of Hawthorne describing the color of Pearl's cheeks. Or how green the grass is or anything like that. But I get your choice. I get your choice. I totally understand that. Sorry. I'm so sorry. But whenever...
I think that, you know, just kind of shows, like, the power of books. Like, we have such, like, strong like, visceral reactions to them, and it's cool to hear
and
everybody's different opinions.
That's it. It's my own personal opinion. And my opinion is not necessarily mean a judgment.
Yeah.
It's just an opinion.
And it could, like, you know, the writing style of the book. Like you said, you were totally into the story, but the writing style. And for me, I kind of got lost in the words and the description and then the puzzling and trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
But I would, again, I would say if I didn't have such a phenomenal professor to kind of take you through reading that book, if I just read it on my own, it would be more difficult to say that's one of my favorite books.
I was 16 years old and I was forced to read it.
Yeah, there you go.
So that makes
it can have a strong impact on how you feel about a book.
So actually, I might need to reread that, honestly. I have done that before. I have reread a book that I hated just to make sure.
You're like, let me confirm.
Let me confirm that I still hate this book. But I would actually strongly believe that I would probably like it as an adult. Sorry.
So
all right.
We'll invite Jesse back
after
she's read it, and we'll have a whole podcast.
Yeah, whole podcast on what does Jesse think about this book the second
exactly.
time around.
Okay, but my favorite book. You're right. It's nigh on impossible. It's one of the hardest questions. I'm not the biggest fan of what's your favorite anything type of questions because it depends on what type of mood I'm in. I'm always scared to death that I'm going to forget something that means so much to me when asked that question. But it's also a very good question to help understand who you are a little bit more. Ultimately, when I thought about this question, I had to just kind of take a step back and make it really macro and said, if I had never read this book, would it have changed who I am as a person?
Okay.
Wow.
And that's what I ended up with. The answer to that question is anything set in Middle Earth.
Okay.
So The Hobbit or The Lord of the Rings or The Appendices, anything written by Tolkien about Middle Earth. If I had never read those, I would be a different person.
Wow.
And hopefully I'm a better person now. But that's why I have to ultimately say those books.
As a side note, I tried to read the Tolkien books and I could never finish them.
And see, that's awesome. Yeah, it's I mean, that's, I love
that.
But
again, I think it was the fantasy element of the story. Like, my brain just couldn't absorb the... the fantastical creatures and the setting, and I just didn't have the imagination.
Yeah, I'd be willing to try it again. Because I tried reading them when I was a lot younger, and I think I just wasn't in the right headspace to really appreciate them, because they are, you know, when you talk to a lot of people about their favorite book, like, they're like, Jesse, that, like, Middle Earth is it for them. Like,
that's, I want to live in the Shire. I want to I want to be a hobbit.
Hobbit/librarian.
/librarian. I will be the librarian hobbit in Hobbiton. Yeah.
All right. There you go.
But in my opinion, I have always felt that fantasy has the ability to be the most powerful vehicle for uncovering truths of what it's like to be a human. You can take these fantastical things that are happening, but through analogy and allegory, this is a human plight. And I will die on this hill about how much I feel about fantasy in that way. And Tolkien's the godfather of that. He's the one that kind of... Well, nobody did it better, in my opinion. And I've read a lot of fantasy, and I have a lot of lesser-known fantasy novels that I love, but I still keep going back to the father of it all. There are so many themes in the book, from, like, fate versus free will, industry destroying nature, loss and the effects of having to say goodbye to people. I mean, all of these are themes and portions of what he's writing about, but there are people out there who have doctorates in Lord of the Rings and in Tolkien. So I'm not saying I'm on their level of academia. This is my personal opinion of what it has affected me. And to me, what I take away more than anything else is ordinary people overcoming evil. And it doesn't matter how small you are. I'm not gonna cry.
It would be okay if you did.
I'm not gonna cry. It doesn't matter if you are more comfortable sitting in your armchair at home and smoking your pipe. You do have the ability to change the freaking world because of, as corny as it sounds, because of love, with a capital L, mm-hmm. with I love humanity, I want good to defeat evil. I want something better for mankind.
If you don't go to the library and check out the Lord of the Rings series,
I really need to get moved to the top of my pile.
I would start with The Hobbit, honestly, for just those themes. And when we're talking, even the heroes are flawed heroes. Yeah. It's not like you're talking about there's nothing wrong with this particular hero. It gives you the good and the bad of your hero figures, but them still making the right decision. Mm-hmm. And that's why I love Tolkien.
I was going to say, I don't think I have anything like that great to say about my favorite.
I'm sweating.
I would say probably for me, nostalgia is a huge feeling and emotion that I guess I expect my books to like evoke in me. And that's why I like to reread them or re-listen to them. So for me, probably my favorite book of all time, I'm cheating and it's a series, but probably the Harry Potter series. I have read them over and over again.
Same themes.
And just J.K. Rowling just like got it for me. Like mm-hmm. I read them at that perfect time that I was the same age as a lot of those characters, like when they came out, that, you know, you just felt like you could identify with what was going on, that, you know, magic was, you know, the cool part, but, you know, you could really identify with what, you know, Harry and Hermione and Ron were going through in the different situations. And just for me, I get something different out of it each and every time that, you know, as a 9-year-old when they came out, you know, like that's totally different. Then, you know,
you mean
like,
when I was in college,
you know, 16 or 25 or, you know, like now, you know, almost 30. Like I just got done listening to Jim Dale, who's phenomenal as the narrator of the series, just got done listening to it this week. And I bawled like a baby again, even though I know what's going to happen in the series finale. It gets me every time.
I have a confession to make. I finally read the first book this year.
You know what? As long as you come to the party,
and
doesn't
actually,
matter where you come.
I listened to it as an audiobook because I didn't think that I would be able to sit through, and I did like it, mm-hmm. but I think I'm at a point in my life where I'm older and it doesn't affect me in the same mm-hmm. way, but there is a legion of people that love Harry Potter.
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. there's a Harry Potter world now in Florida. You mm-hmm. know, like, people still want to go or they want to be
immersed butter beer.
In that world. I still kind of want to try Butterbeer. I've never gone there, but mm-hmm. It's going to happen.
Did you have more books that you wanted to talk about? Because I saw you had.
I did have a little bit of a list.
Sure.
I mean.
Yeah, we can.
Yeah, we can go back.
Just a list of some of my favorite books. I mentioned Ender's Game before. That's one of them. But also Persuasion by Jane Austen is
an
absolute masterpiece. I will reread that one over again. I just for the first time read David Copperfield by Charles Dickens, and it's now one of my favorite books. But also Ready Player One by Ernest Cline is one of, I was a pop culture child of the 80s, so I kind of felt he wrote that specifically for me. So I have to have a shout out for that one because
of
how much
other millions of people that have read it.
It was written for Jesse.
Yeah.
Books like that, and then majority of my favorites are classics, just like you, Jen. And I'm almost a contrarian. I don't want to like what everybody else likes. Mm-hmm. I want mine to be a little more obscure. I want mine. But when it's good literature, you just got to accept it and mm-hmm. say, yes, Jane Austen was a genius. Mm-hmm. And yes, Copperfield was a genius. And yes, To Kill a Mockingbird is worth all of the accolades that mm-hmm. it's gotten over the past several decades.
And Jesse, you did a check it out for Ready Player One.
I did do one for Ready Player One, yes. I did. I find doing check it outs for the books that you love to be the hardest check it outs to write.
Yeah.
Because you want to. Because you
want.
You're like, you need to understand how wonderful this book is.
We only get 2 minutes.
And we only get
how
two
much
minutes.
I want you to enjoy this book. I need to drill this into your head in 2 minutes. Hard to distill that down.
It really, really is.
Definitely. So, now that we've kind of talked about some of our favorites, do we think we can put a ballpark number on how many books we've read in our lifetime? You want to take this one first, Jen?
Maybe an estimate. I know when I was in first grade, I read over 700 books.
Whoa.
I have a certificate somewhere to prove it.
I have documentation.
I feel like you should hang it in your, you should find it and hang it in your office.
So, I didn't read 1,000 books before kindergarten, but I did read 700 books in first grade. I read a couple books a month now as an adult. You know, obviously I read more like chapter books and things when I was younger because I did always have my nose in a book when I was a kid, just because I loved reading so much. And picture books that I have read to my son and to my nieces and nephews. I was kind of trying to come up with the ballpark of like 3,000. Yeah, probably around 3,000 books.
Wow.
Plus I read books, picture books, when I'm working sometimes. Because it's just, they just take a few minutes.
Yeah, there are new ones.
I need to pad my numbers here. Let me read one real quick.
Oh, this one looks good. Let's read this one.
Be like, I'm going to beat all these kids that are doing 1,000 books before kindergarten. Yeah. Like, I got to up my numbers.
1,000 books before lunch.
Yeah.
How about you, Jesse?
I actually, as a reader, had kind of a roller coaster relationship with reading. When I started reading at 4, I read all throughout elementary school and part of junior high. And then when I turned into a teenager, I stopped reading. I only read what I had to read. I was doing other things. I was being more social. I was in sports. I did all of those other things and you know, worked on the theater crew and things like that. The only reading that I actually did was the stuff that was assigned to me. But then once I started, like I was probably about junior in college was when it started coming back again. And it came back full force, full force. This is just going to turn into a long-winded answer before we get to the number.
Fine.
In the last couple of years, actually, I have made an agreement with myself to read less than what I have been doing, just to bring more balance. I have a young kid, just bring more balance about how much time I spend with him. I actually told myself I will only read this amount instead of the normal 100 and some odd a year. But with picture books, with the wilderness years of me not reading.
I like that.
Yeah.
Wilderness years.
The wilderness years.
I think there are a lot of people who can relate to that.
Mm,
and I think a lot of parents, you know, who are like, my teenager doesn't read. I can't get them to read. But if they have a relationship to reading as a child, what you're saying is there's hope, Jesse, that they'll
what
come
I'm
back
saying.
To
there's
reading.
Hope. Yeah, there's absolutely hope that they'll come back to it with a vengeance. But I'm probably around the same as you. I'm probably around 3,000. If we're talking all picture books that I read, that I've read to my son and to my nieces and all of that, and then anything else that I read in between, including textbooks. I mean, I read the words.
Yeah.
So that's definitely part of it.
They count. They probably weren't as enjoyable as
no,
the other
no,
books,
they weren't,
but
yeah.
And now Kelsey is about to put
it's
us both to
shame. I know.
Well, we've already talked about how, as a kid, I was that series junkie that... I was the kid that checked out probably 50 books at a time from the library. So I would say I was trying to really figure it out and be like, okay, what series did I read and how many books were in those series? I think my number is probably like 5,000 plus.
We need a sound effect.
But, you know, then I have that family that my dad just isn't a reader. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't dislike it, but it's just not something that he does. And his number would probably be like 100.
Yeah.
Like, you know, always like fostered that with me that like, I will take you to the library. I will take you to go buy books, but just not his thing. So I subtly keep trying to like get him to read stuff now. Like now that I'm a librarian, I'm like, are you sure you wouldn't like this? Like, here's a biography from that guy that show that you like. Like, are you sure you don't want to give this a shot? So I think there's still hope for, you know, our other family members too, that not just teenagers, like... You know, you might find a late in life love of reading.
My husband might read 12 books a year, and every last one of them is going to be nonfiction.
Yeah.
He does not read fiction. In the 10 years that we've been together, he might have read one fiction book that I forced on him, and he came away from it going, eh. But it takes him a long time to finish a book, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll only read nonfiction, and it's a much smaller number.
Yeah, I think that just kind of, you know, leads into the larger conversation of, like, really what type of readers, like, if you do read, like, what type of reader are you? You know, and as librarians, we can't help but do a little research. So, you know, we like to kind of dive in and see what's out there. So we came across a couple of really fun infographics, one from Laura E. Kelly's website, and one from a blog by Hawa Alam about kind of diving in and really kind of visually seeing, you know, what type of different categories are there out there and kind of what type of reader are we?
And the question of what kind of reader are you really kind of sparked our dive into our relationship with reading, you know, to think about that and everything that we've been talking about. And we wanted to extend that to our staff at the Sioux City Public Library to find out what they reported, what kind of readers they were. And we have more than a few free range readers at the Sioux City Public Library, meaning that they see themselves as a combination of many kinds of readers and still unique. They refuse to be defined or categorized, just like Jesse, you had said from your post.
Yeah, I kind of like that. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be put into a box.
Yeah.
You
want to, I actually identify.
Free to read a mystery, yeah. Or, you know, and then free to read the next time you pick up a cheesy paperback or a cozy mm-hmm. mystery. Yep. I get it.
As you would expect, the library staff is full of book lovers.
Yeah.
Many of them identify it as book eaters or genre theme readers, fiction fanatics, and series junkies, kind of like you, Kelsey. We had a couple of compulsive book buyers and even a few hoarders who own more books than they will ever have time to read.
I'm just going to jump in here because I was that person too that, you know, before I became a librarian, I was constantly, you know, scouring Goodwill, mm-hmm. garage sales, all that for those books that you're like, I'm going to totally read that. But kind of after reading a book that I checked out at the library, the whole, you know, Marie Kondo's book and other books on minimalism, I've kind of tried to taper down that attitude of I need to own every single book. And working in a public library yeah. kind of helps out too.
I can confidently say that is not me at all. I do not hoard books. A, I work in a library. Mm-hmm. That helps out a lot. And then I have my own, I'm going to talk about Bob right now if that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Bob is my best friend. His name is Bob because it stands for my book of books. And Bob is filled with books I've read, books I want to read, series that I'm interested in, audiobook narrators that I like. And I write everything in Bob that sparks my interest. So I don't necessarily need to hoard these books because I work at a library. Mm-hmm. I just write down the title and find a way to get it to them later because I don't know what mood I'm going to be in at any particular point. Suddenly I'm hit with I need to listen to Richard Armitage read all the books. So I have a list of his narrations, and now I can go after him now.
This is kind of like your holy grail, like, it's never be without.
Yeah, exactly.
Bob.
You remember Indiana Jones and the uh-huh. Last Crusade and Henry's book?
Yep.
That's like my, yeah.
Nice.
Exactly.
And if you see Jessie in the library, she is often not without.
Without Bob.
Bob.
Yeah.
Bob is
she
always with her.
She kind of carries Bob everywhere. Yeah.
Bob goes with me everywhere. There was another staff member who I actually identified quite a bit with, who shared that her reading habits have actually changed over the years according to what stages in life mm-hmm. she was in. And she's a mother of young children. She actually considers herself a partial reader or no time to read, only read books to her kids phase in her life, which I would imagine since she is a book lover, once her children become a little older, become a little more independent in their own reading, that she can go back to whichever her default setting is
yeah.
of what kind of reader she is.
Yeah, definitely think the different stages you're at in life kind of definitely
yeah.
shift
mm-hmm.
what type of reader you are. So we also have a lot of people at Sioux City Public Library that are kind of mood readers, you know, that the tone of the book has a big impact on, you know, kind of it has to match their mood. And, you know, another staff person said that, you know, they can go grab a book with the best of intentions and then kind of not read it because they lost the motivation. I would say that I wouldn't identify as that type of reader, but I've definitely had that before.
I can totally relate to that.
Wouldn't say it's totally uncommon. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, we have a lot of trend readers on staff that, you know, when a book receives a lot of hype, they really want to know, like, what all the hype is about. I'm kind of guilty of that, too. Sometimes it usually happens like within book club that, you know, mm-hmm. like a lot of my book club members will really
oh, sure. yeah.
be like, oh, have you heard about this book? Like, you should totally read this one. And then because I want to be able to talk about it with them, I kind of have to see what all the hype is about. And then we also have a lot of people on staff that really like ebooks, but we also have some that are very attached to being physical book loyalists. Like they refuse to do ebooks, e-audio of any kind. And then we also have a lot of people on staff that listen to audiobooks regularly. I would consider myself one of them. I think Jen listens to a lot. Oh, I do, you know, too. When you're on your commute or, you know, you're working out, something like that. It just kind of is a way to read a book while you're doing your chores, you know, or something like that. You can get that extra mile in on the treadmill or...
It's keep up with your reading lists.
Yeah,
exactly. Just
Bob's not
in the
getting
background.
Any shorter. Yeah.
This is a way to help Bob and Jesse, you know, get
help my relationship with Bob.
Kind of really helps that out.
One of the things that surprised me in our staff responses, I don't know why it surprised me, because I work at the library, but the typical librarian stereotype is that we read every book and we read it all the way through, and you know, people just say, have you read this, you know, like they just assume that you've read it. But staff at the Sioux City Public Library were multitaskers, reading from multiple books in a day, and some of us are spoiler readers. Not me, I've never done this.
Never identify with that at all. I will hardcore judge somebody for that.
Yes, I'm not shaming someone because somebody did say that you know, flipping to the back of the book to find out how the story ends puts them at ease when they know what to expect.
I can appreciate that. I can relate to that only in terms of like TV shows or movies. I don't necessarily mind if I know who dies.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. I am a very empathetic person and I go through roller coasters of emotions. But if I'm spending the time reading something, I don't want to know anything. I almost don't even read the back cover sometimes. Yeah.
And so many of us are partial readers. And whether, you know, one of the infographics that we came across called it a polygamist reader, another one called it a promiscuous reader. But the point is we read a ton of books all at the same time. We abandon a book that we're in the middle of when a new book we've been waiting for comes out, or when our ebook hold comes in. I totally am that kind of reader. And I agree. It says a lot about the book if I commit and read it all the way to the end.
Definitely.
My list of DNF did not finish books is remarkably small. I finish what I start. Although I have been in the middle of Brothers Karamazov for 15 years.
And I would say that I am the complete opposite of you. My list of did not finish books, if people ask me, did you read this book? And I will always say, well, I read the first 50 pages.
Yeah. And if it doesn't suck you in.
I finish it.
I've gotten over that guilt. I used to have that book guilt, but now I'm over it. I'm like, there's plenty of books out there that I want to read that if it's not grabbing me.
I'm always of the, but what if the ending is the reason you read the whole book? I fall into that trap a lot. I actually finished a book yesterday that when I finished it, I was like, oh, thank goodness that's over.
And I think both Jenna are like, yeah, I would have put that book down about 200 pages ago.
I think the only book I've ever read that I really felt like that, and I actually had to listen to it as an audiobook, was The Life of Pi by Jan Martel.
That's one of my favorite books.
But I had, like, I made myself get to the end.
That book gave me chills. I love that book.
I did love the book.
Well, see,
but
Jen loves
end.
Scarlet Letter. Yeah, I love Life of Pi, and you hate each other's. Totally fine. Totally
and
fine.
I love it.
So we all are all different kinds of readers. But I think when you're talking to librarians, we're really just going to push the fact that we want you to be a reader. You know, research shows that reading improves concentration, vocabulary, and critical thinking skills. It builds self-esteem, reduces stress, improves memory, builds empathy. We can go on and on. It helps us to expand our minds and develop our imaginations.
Definitely. You know, and you kind of want to find a little bit more about, you know, what type of reader you are, follow the links from the podcast and check out the fun infographics from Laura E. Kelly and Hawa Alam, or you can, you know, come visit us at the library and chat with your favorite librarian or any librarian. You know, we're there to help.
We love talking books.
Yeah, that's not a thing that we hate to do.
Yeah.
You could get us going and we'll never stop. And you'll be like, my parking meter's expiring. Like, I need to go. We'll still talk to you about books. We really would like to give Jesse a big thanks for joining
us today.
Thank you,
Jesse. This was a blast.
Sharing your love of books and reading.
Thank you. This is so much fun.
This is Jen.
And this is Kelsey.
And Jesse.
Thank you for listening to the first 50 pages.